Spirit speaks to us in many different kinds of ways, sometimes in the silence, sometimes in the breeze through the treetops or the sound of the water dancing over the rocks, sometimes in the music we just experience, and sometimes in just listening to other people. And this is the reason for our wisdom circle that we established on 1st of June, is giving an opportunity for different individuals to share a little bit of the story of their own spiritual journey and some of the insights they've gained along the way. So today, Nicholas, who is one of our seasonal residents, will be sharing a bit of his story. We have some really interesting people for the rest of the month of July. And then starting in August, we're not going to have individual speakers. It's going to be your story. People who are here, they want to share a little bit about their own story. Because wisdom, we all have wisdom based on our life experience and our story. And we can learn from one another, not just the experts. And so, without further ado, Nicholas.
Hi, everybody. I'm going to spin a towel to steal from George Martin. I'm going to parody him. It's basically a song of pain and love instead of ice and fire. But just so that I don't lose the thread too much, I need to keep track of myself. So, I was born over there in Philadelphia and abused in the Roman Catholic religion. But I always had this, you know, the cultural intonations of storytelling, and obviously words mean things to me, and I always wrote different stories, and so I wanted to kind of take you through my journey based on some of the stories I wrote, without actually telling you all the stories. But this spiritual journey of mine, I realized I started young, and how much of it at that point was from what religious upbringing I had, and how much of it was in my heart. I tend to feel that most of it was in my heart. But in the first grade, I wrote two stories, which ended up getting me into some special class. That one of them was, if I were blank for a day, what would I do? And the other one was just anything that you wanted to come up with. So the one story I chose was, if I were God for a day, what would I do? And I wrote this wonderful short little, like, two paragraph, not even a page, this is first grade, of what I would do. And, of course, it's all the wonderful good things of reducing pain, increasing compassion, feeding the hungry, you know, all the stuff a first grader would say about what they would want to be if they were God for a day. The other story was the flip side of the coin. So there's my love and my compassion as this little kid. And the flip side of the story was a family of bears walking through the woods, being killed by a psychopathic human and trapped in these horrible things. And it was an obstacle course, and it was a bloody horror pain story that did not have a happy ending. It ended with everybody dying in the first grade. Maybe that's why they put me in the special class. So I don't know. So that says something a little bit about pain and love. Another story that came a few years later was a story about the Woozles. And the Woozles, in hindsight, were these, you know, fairy little imaginary creatures that were my community. They were my group of weirdos. They were my tribe, right? And it was hard to find my tribe back then. And so I wrote that story. And so things, as life progressed, and I dealt with child abuse and then Tourette's syndrome, which is a condition, a neurological condition, but over the years as my spiritual journey has progressed, I kind of see that condition as well as a lot of other mental illnesses as kind of in the old shamanic traditions of soul loss. We'll get into that in a little bit. But all of these little things that kind of made up the pieces of me when I was a kid were these painful experiences of, you know, having that fear of being at home, and so never really having a safe and secure home. My earliest childhood memories are hiding in the closet with mom and having mom crying and hope she doesn't get hit, and have dad had a good day. So I learned how to do things like zone out and to the TV and just be like, ignore the world and pull that cloak up and that hood and dissociate from reality, because reality is a dangerous place. And the people you go to for love were showing me pain. And when Tourette syndrome came along, it wasn't just family, it was community. Friends all of a sudden, oh yeah, and it's understandable. Adolescents, they don't want to hang out with the kid who's ticking, twitching, doing shit like that. So, I lost that community. Another bit of pain. And then, of course, the pain we all experience in different relationships we've had, the pain of loss and grief. There is the pain of going through and doing the wise thing. And when I was 17, getting an abortion with my partner at the time. But it still led to the pain of having nightmares of flowing down a river of blood with babies screaming for a while. And so the pain of that loss and that decision, all kind of culminating and hardening me, turning me into a bitter, jaded cynic. And so we're human, 80% water, and we are water. We need to flow, we need to dance with the emotions and the spirit within. But with that much pain, one of the defense mechanisms we all put up is to become hardened, become that rock instead of the water. If the water's flowing over you and pushing around you, eventually the water will win and push you down the river, erode you away into nothing. But so that's kind of these early years of this story of, all right, here's all this pain. And, you know, I can go into a whole bunch of other bits and pieces of the pain, but I think I'll switch gears and say, all right, well, we had this other story that I wrote in college. And this was the first glimmer of how love can help to heal and overcome the pains of our past. And in college I wrote a story, I forget what it was titled, but it was about a journey I had taken on some acid. And I left my home and sit in the Philadelphia and went out for a little walkabout. And as I left, it was trash day, and in Philadelphia trash day is kind of gross. Streets are lined up with some nasty stuff, and it smells just lovely. But I saw this open trash bag with a bunch of meat, chickens and things like that, and had maggots growing on it. And I was just disgusted. I was in that bitter, jaded cynic. The world is shit. There's so much horrible things that I just don't care. I'm the rock. And how disgusting is that, and how these, you know, horrible little maggots are, you know, anything, and how wasteful our culture is. And, you know, I kept walking in my own head, kind of ranting to myself. I tend to do that. I have a bit of crazy. I'm the homeless guy that you see walking down the street, talking to himself, singing, dancing, yelling, screaming. That's me at my worst. So, but I'm still fairly harmless, so don't be afraid of those people. Go talk to me, because they need some connection too. And so as I'm talking to myself and walking and kind of enjoying the sights and scenery of Philadelphia, by the time I look up and I realize where I'm at, I'm in a not good place for a 19-year-old white boy with long hair to be walking at 2 in the morning. As the swank bar let out, I was like, oh, okay, all right, they're all looking at me. And I'm talking to myself, so they must know, and he's just crazy, man. So I think I'm on my way. But after, you know, a long journey all the way back out, probably 10 miles outside of the city, the dawn rose, the acid wore off, and I was like, oh, okay, I got to go back home. And I head back to my place in the city, took the L, and I get back and see the maggots there outside my house. Oh, isn't that nice? They're all chilling out. They're playing together. They're having a good time. They're munching. That's some good family spirit right there. I dig it. All right. And so that was like this change in perspective, right? These different lenses that we can use to view the world we see around us, you know? Bamboo's a weed. It's disgusting. Oh, my God. It's beautiful. Feel the surrounding energy of life and water that it provides. Or you can just see it as a weed that's invasive species and we need to get rid of it, you know? And just different lenses on how we maintain and how we take care of the world around us. But so in college, during this time, even though I was having these perspective shifts and using certain medicines, which at the time I didn't realize how powerful a medicine they were. And so a lot of the drugs I ended up using were not used with the purposes of medicine. And but around that time, I started to get, one, I broke my back in a skateboarding accident when I was 18. And two, I started to get gout at a very young age. Gout is a horribly painful condition that your body produces too much uric acid, and is all that uric acid crystallizes and forms little shards of glass, basically, that get stuck in your joints and your ligaments. And so if somebody says they have gout and they have a bad flare-up, know that it is like 8 or 9 on that pain scale that they're going through. And so I started to get that on the regular, and it wasn't like a little bit of pain, it was a lot of pain. And I was broken, with my broken back, I had that physical pain. So that's the next part of the story. Aside from the emotional pain of my youth and dealing with all that, there's this physical pain that came along with the Tourette syndrome, with the gout, with the broken back. And the broken back was for 15 months, I was on a cane, hobbling. My hips had, by the time I got surgery to replace it, had completely been misaligned, and my right side was 2 inches higher than my left side, and I was like, old before my time. And so I know what it is to be immobile, and it's not pleasant. And Professor Payne, as I like to call him, he teaches us many, many lessons. And we can get into some of them, but we are all one. This idea of spirituality being separate from body, being separate from mind, is an illusion. A delusion, I would say, created by these folks that want to split it up. It's all interconnected. And so when the body's misaligned, the emotion and the spirit are misaligned. Spirit's misaligned, the body and the emotions are misaligned, and all that interplays with each other. So we must understand all of these things. And so pain, I've given you a few stories, and the pain continues along. And during that time in my 20s, I went quite the opposite route spiritually, and was, I didn't need your mysticism, your spirituality, your God. I saw religions and realized that they were the cause of the most death, pain, and suffering of any other kind of war there is. So, screw all you. So, if you need any kind of argumentation on what it is to talk to a militant atheist, come on at me. Because I'm one of the four horsemen. I am the Dan Dennett and the Sam Harris and the Christopher Hitchens of the world. But at the same time, I'm the Richard Dawkins that takes the time to understand this earth and this universe. And so when I look out at the earth and the stars, I see this whole other layer. And that's part of what my pain provided, the silver lining of emotional hurt and trauma of losing friends, is that I put my nose into a book and I learned more than most people know about the universe. And so I look at the water and the glimmering vibrations of it, and I see Navier-Stokes equations, and I see the electromagnetic vibrations coming off, and I can visualize this whole other layer that I realize that many, many don't. They feel it, perhaps in their spirit, but they can't understand it. And a lot of people do understand it, and we, as we continue to progress on this technological singularity we're on, this exponential curve of knowledge of humanity, and not just of any particular group, but as a species, we're starting to be able to learn that we have to mature enough to come together and act as a species. And I do hope for that for the future. But people are beginning to understand all of these interconnections. And so what shamans of old have known forever about how to handle mental illness and soul loss, they've known all along that adverse childhood experiences and traumas and a lack of connection to community are what cause mental illness. And now Western science is catching up, and they're like, oh yeah, the opposite of addiction is connection. Oh yeah, oh, if we can only use this plant medicine to heal the traumas of our past that people put behind us, and then all of a sudden people get off of heroin. One dose of iboga will help people be able to connect with their emotional selves that they've long since forgotten. They'll become a rock, and that rock's so far away they don't even know where it is, but these plant medicines will help them go and grab that rock and be like, oh yeah, that's water too. And they get over those traumas, and then all of a sudden, an ayahuasca journey cures heroin. Has a much higher, statistically significant higher rate of curing heroin addiction than any other form of recovery. Iboga, one dose of Iboga will cure alcoholism 80% of the time. So there's these plant medicines. That's one form of healing. There's all these other forms of healing too. One of them is just basic self-care, which is brought about by love and loving yourself. But when you're in the state I was in my 20s, where you're dealing with pain constantly, gout flare-ups 2 or 3 times a month, broken backs, and just being caught up in that jaded, cynic view of life, you don't take care of yourself. You stop it because you hate everything. You hate the world. There's darkness everywhere. And there's darkness within you too. And you see it in yourself. And you see, oh, here's these things that I'm doing and these ways that I'm acting that I don't like. So I hate myself. I don't have faith in myself. How can I have faith in humanity to do what's right and to create the world that I envision in my nightmares when I can't even make it happen for myself? And so you fall further and further into addiction, alcoholism, and the opiates. Luckily, by that time, I'd already had 2 friends pass away from heroin addiction, so I didn't go that far, and I knew I would love heroin, so I just stopped with Vicodin and Alprazolam and OxyContin and about 5 or 6 bottles of whiskey a week, and I was killing myself, eating whatever I wanted to eat, and growing up pretty big and fat, and not really caring about the world. And yet, through that pain, there was the flip side. There was the if I were God for a day side. There was the anarchist activist in me. And so I was an anarchist. And I've done many, many things. And I've participated in protests. And I've gone ahead and borrowed a friend's non-potable water truck and unloaded the whole thing on a construction site that Enbridge Pipeline was trying to put through Northwest Ohio so they couldn't work for a couple of weeks. I've locked my friend into a house who was trying to be evicted during the housing crisis of 2008, and we made a big stick of it. Got on MSNBC and Democracy Now, and, we made a big show of trying to get a moratorium now because kicking people out of their homes is fucking horrendous. And so I always had that warrior within fighting for the better world that I knew was possible, even though I didn't really see it all that often. Let's see, where am I going? All right, this is why I have this. So, this idea, this stories of pain and love, I'll have a little intermission here for a minute and go back to, there's this great quote by Kurt Vonnegut, who wrote in Cat's Cradle, and he said, well, one of his characters said, "Tigers gotta hunt, birds gotta fly, man's gotta ask himself why. Tigers gotta sleep, birds gotta land, man's gotta tell himself he understands." And I feel like in many ways, all these stories I'm telling you of pain and loss and fighting, the battles, they're that warrior within, these things of which you need to rest from and recover and do some self-care and huga. But I had equated my whole life love with pain instead of love and pain. And I started to make these realizations and come to emotional closure, not just intellectual closure, but emotional closure on the scars and traumas of my past. And more recently, I'll skip ahead here, I managed to, get off addiction and be able to kind of get that under control because of friends' love. And the love that was shown by these friends, because they were musicians that I played with, and they came and they talked to me and they let me know, you got to do something. And so there's that love shown from my friends. And then further on, I've created this community over in Washington State just a few years ago called Confluent. And it was a community of people that wanted to get a makerspace and an art gallery going, kind of just a creative center in this conservative little militaristic / farming / super religious, weird religious town that is the place where we process the uranium for the bombs in World War II, and so has since become the largest environmental cleanup site in the world, at least until the tar sands take over. And so here in this toxic waste dump in the desert, I was fighting to be able to make it my home, and striving and struggling to, like, okay, well, there's no nightlife, there's no culture, there's no arts, the city is non-existent, it's a car culture everywhere, you have to drive pretty much everywhere. And I was sitting there riding my bike down these very dangerous streets, just like fighting the power and going against, but still fighting, still struggling. You know, instead of embracing the flow of love and spirit and to make life not a struggle, and that's where I realized that, you know, York said life isn't meant to be a struggle. It's really not meant to be a struggle. You know, you got to pick your battles when and where you need to, but not constantly be in a state of fighting. And so Confluent came around, and I didn't understand completely yet what that idea of community. I hadn't yet met a full group of my fellow woozles in the real world. Just a little, you know, musicians here and little groups here that I participated in. But here was a group of the woozles, and they were free to be them. And we did amazing things at this space. And during this time, as I let the love and spirit flow, manifestation, well, duh, anything and everything we needed was just there. Boom, boom, boom. And I began to realize that, you know, part of the story that I've left out so much so far, because it didn't play much of a role intellectually for me until this time, was this idea of animal spirits. But throughout, I always had Mama Earth to go back to. All that pain and suffering throughout the years. Mama Earth is a great balm, you know, healing. Pop sky too, you know, you look up into the stars and, you know, just like I see the Navier-Stokes equations, I can also see the parallax view and understand how far away things are and understand the supernovas and that the stars in the sky we see are some small little marble in the grand cosmic scheme of things, and that right now there's a satellite going around called TESS looking at other stars to find other planets just like ours, and understanding that, you know, all of these elements, these are normal, these are natural, we are not special, life is most likely everywhere, and we can talk to them. I have no doubt about that. But that's another story for another time. So, Confluent community. Being able to manifest. Being able to have that conscious creation. Being able to have that spirit of community. And to create a safe space in a not-so-safe world. And that's what I'd come to realize was, instead of doing the businessy end of things, or, you know, initially it started with me, oh yeah, I'll come to this group meeting and maybe I'll make a website for you. And eventually it became, okay, well, I'm leading this, and I'm talking to politicians about getting grants, and I'm talking to the librarians about teaming up to be able to help them make their maker space for more kid-friendly, because we couldn't afford the insurance for dealing with kids. Kids and power tools don't go together. But, you know, shape-shifting into another energetic form so that I can deal with a sensitive artist who's trying to show a show, but has such rage and anger because of his situation that he's freaking out over little things, like the fact that he couldn't have the musicians be sitting next to the power tools while everybody's getting drunk at his art opening reception. And, you know, switching over to having bonfires with all of these technologists and physicists, because it's out there where the Hanford site is, and so there's more PhDs in that area than anywhere else. And I'm sitting there talking to somebody from the LIGO Center who helped to discover gravitational waves, the very ripples in the fabric of space-time itself, and then switching gears and talking to a transgender woman who about her struggles to be the person she wants to be in life and not be afraid to express herself creatively. And then I'm switching over and I'm talking to a tech guru. I call the tech guys the mycelial network, because sometimes it's hard to communicate with them, but every once in a while you see one of those nice little fungus mushrooms pop up and you can talk to them. And you hit on that social being, and then all of a sudden you realize that there's a vast network that they've got going on underneath. And sometimes they're autistic, and there was one fellow that was autistic, and as he kept hanging out and realizing that he was safe and could express himself in this community, all of a sudden his sensitivity went down just enough where he was able to come out to bonfires with many people and drink a drink or two and roll his little handmade robot around and get his fountain show that he had set up on his own so that it was hooked up to a keyboard and people could play a keyboard and different lights and fountains would shoot up. And here's this beautiful fucking creature that nobody knew about because he was autistic and he kept to himself. But here we go, we create this community of Woozles where people are safe and free to express themselves. And that was a huge changing point for my spirituality. And I realized that I could heal the pains of my past through connection, through helping other people to connect, through love. And so the story of pain and love continues. And during this time, I developed these relationships, and I realized that part of my problem and struggle is because I didn't understand a good idea of what relationship was and how to love somebody. That I didn't love not just people, but other things. You know, I have a relationship with this thing here, my spaceship. And I develop it, and it's special to me. And I have a relationship with the river over here. There's this wonderful little spot. I sit there and I talk to the moss. And I go up to Fairy Falls and I see the butterflies coming down. And I talk to a 7-year-old boy whose family's going through a divorce. And he's like, where are all the fairy rocks at? I want to see a fairy gem. And I take him aside. I'm like, all right, here, slow down, buddy. It's like a video game, you know? When you first get into a video game, it's too much. There's too overwhelming. You know, you can't see all the things. You're just learning how to, like, you know, pick up the little health box and do this. But in order to see everything, you got to slow down. You take the time to understand what's going on. You want to see fairy gems? Look everywhere. And he looks down. And of course, all the rocks around here are just sparkling with mica. And it changed his world. He was blown away. And then all of a sudden, the rest of the trip, he's like, oh, there's little fairy gems here. Oh my God, a mushroom there. Oh my God, look at that. And it's just like, I was like, oh, you totally just fell in love with Earth. That's awesome. And, So, you know, I've developed these relationships with all things and all creatures. And part of the creatures that I've developed these, you know, spiritual relationships with have become my animal totem. Because aside from the pains I've told you, there's been other stuff that have been, you know, earthquakes inside my lifetime of fear. I know the truth too shall pass, the beginning is near, as Knuckle Bear would say. But, I developed these relationships with the animals, and so I have a whole totem that helps keep me in check. And there are a few different things that I do to keep myself and my own psyche in check, because this brain of mine does get a little bit wild and crazy, I realize sometimes. And it has great potential, but it also has great potential for some crazy stuff. I can be that homeless guy talking to himself. I can be the manic fella who comes up and realizes that I have currently the knowledge and capability to create a quantum communications device based on quantum entangled particles that transcends the speed of light, that barrier we thought was impossible to transcend, and can communicate anywhere in real time, regardless of bandwidth, anywhere, not just on the planet, but in the solar system and possibly in the universe. And so here's this idea that if I allow myself to get into the manic state and create that idea and bring it to fruition, I might lose track of myself. And then when you get into a manic state with this bipolar, heretic fella, the crash can be pretty hard. So I balance. Keep that as a fictitious story that I drool over. And I keep myself in check with these animal spirits. I keep myself in check with Jungian archetypes. I don't look too deeply into them because there's issues, but it's good to keep track of things. And I keep myself in check with the agreements that, you know, the four agreements of Toltec wisdom. And my spirit animals are that of the squirrel, and that was born of pain too. And I realized that, you know, the squirrel spirit is, you know, he goes and collects all the nuts, and he goes and does what needs to be done, does the hard work to be able to, you know, get whatever I happen to need, whether that be money or something else, to be able to survive or bring to life something I need. He also likes to go around, and, you know, and so I keep him. He's my immature masculine, maybe, but you know, so the squirrel spirit came to me early on before I recognized it, because I was playing around with guns, and you know, I had a little BB gun, and when I was eight, nine, seven, I don't know how old. I shot a squirrel dead center in the back. Broke its back and paralyzed it. And so I had to go and get this squirrel and put it out of its misery and bury it. And he said and fired a gun after that. I was crying for days. But here I am. I shoot this squirrel in the back. And a few years later, I break my back. And I'm out of commission for a year and a half. And then, of course, the wolf spirit. I've always had it, too, in the dog. I haven't met a dog that has not loved me. Everybody's like, oh, no, beware the dog, beware the dog. I'm like, hey, come here, buddy, what's that? You know, we're old friends. And that has its own meaning. And I've had a variety of different encounters with the wolf from early on, from the first love of my life. A Romanian, this 6-foot-tall Romanian beauty that I have no idea what she saw in me, but whatever, she saw the spirit. And she comes from a family of Romanian gypsies that just happened to be in America because they were good at making fake teeth, and so they sold fake teeth to the dentists for crowns and caps. But on New Year's Day, when I was a young man, I go and I'm invited to New Year's dinner at the house, and the father had been fasting, because that's his ritual, for 3 days before New Year's feast. And during New Year's feasts, he tells stories about his journey of fast. And one of the stories he told was a story that did not make me feel welcome at the time. But looking back on it, I understand why he had this. But he had a vision of being hunted through the snow-covered mountains. And he was running through the pine forest, running for his life. against a pack of wolves that were hunting him down. And finally, they caught up to him, and they tore him up, and they were killing him. And as he was dying, and blood was everywhere, he looked up and he saw my face. And I was discounted at the time, because I was already starting to get pretty bitter and jaded and cynical. But looking back on it, I realized that I have lashed out as the wolf. Not necessarily a pack of wolves, but when I am injured, emotionally and going through that pain and that mental illness, watch out. You know, an injured wolf is a dangerous wolf. That's another reason why I need love and self-care to maintain myself, because of certain agreements I've made with myself. An agreement of do no harm, take no shit. And so that's important. It sounds simple, but do no harm, that's a hard one. That's a hard one. Another agreement I check in with myself is only the most amazing adventures in life and love. And I'm doing all right. And I'm glad to be here. But so there's two parts of my animal totem. And then there's the magpie. The magpie, the first time I saw the magpie, I was out visiting my brother in Montana. And I was like, what is this magical tropical bird in the middle of the Rocky Mountains that looks so beautiful with its blue wings and white chest and just glistening black and, you know, this metallic sheen to it. And it was the magpie. And I've come to understand the magpie a lot better. And there's a whole bunch of different meanings, but they create this domed nest. And within that domed nest is their little sacred space. Their sacred space for practicing what the Danes call kuga. And they're incredibly smart. And they know how to use tools, and they keep that vision. And sometimes they work in conjunction with the wolves without knowing it. And that magpie flies and the wolf will follow. And the magpie finds all the opportunities. And the wolf comes along and judges to see, oh, is this safe? Is this okay? It's all right. I'll come over here. And the final little part of my animal totem that I keep in check with is the hobo spider. And the hobo spider is, in real life, a spider that is doing really well because of climate change up in the Pacific Northwest and the Rocky Mountains. And it's kind of messing things up. It's growing up the ecosystem there. So, but it thrives there now because it's just warm enough. There's a ton of things, and it's part of humanity's interaction with nature is the globalized nature of things. We brought the hobo spider there to Seattle, and it expanded over the decades. Just like the hemlock trees here are dying because of the globalization of us bringing a little parasite from Japan. It's killing all their hemlock trees. You know, this idea of being mindful of the consequences be mindful of whether the wolf is well fed or injured and might lash out. Because consequences matter more than intentions. No matter what you say or do or think, you can have the best of intentions. But those consequences matter. Like, I'm sure certain evil people had only the best of intentions. But what they were doing were horrible consequences. The little Eichmanns of the world, we can call them. Eichmann was the fellow who was just scheduling the train and making it most efficient. There was trains back in Nazi Germany that were taking all the Jews to the concentration camps to kill them. You know, that fellow thought he was doing a good job and refused to accept that, you know, his intentions didn't matter because the consequences were horrendous and he should have stopped doing that. It would have been better to kill himself than to continue doing what he was doing. And I've been in that situation where I had lost my soul and I had been in this dark, bitter, jaded, cynical place, and so just went ahead and after college becoming a mechanical engineer and minor in philosophy. I didn't really care that much anymore about anything, including myself, so I just went where the money was, and the money was with Lockheed Martin, designing ballistic missile defense, being a rocket scientist. And this crazy guy who lives in a tent down by the river used to be a rocket scientist. And and so here I, you know, realized, like, okay, well, it's very easy to deny your soul, to deny your passion, to deny your love, and to not care what you do in life. And as I designed this ballistic missile defense, there came this point where I realized, oh, this doesn't work. And even if it does work, it's very easy to overcome. All of the big states can overcome it, and all it's doing is creating political strife. Meanwhile, we're spending tens of billions of dollars a year. Tens of billions of dollars a year on this system that doesn't work, will never work, is easily overcome. And I found, you know, quite real that we were lying. We had done a test that I was a part of, and I'm sitting there watching it. I'm like, oh yes, this is going to miss failure. And then all of a sudden, magically, things changed up, and they lied to you, good people. And they said, oh yeah, it's successful. We're good. We're saving and protecting ourselves from those nuclear weapons that North Korea might fire, because he's a little bit nuts too. And, you know, spending all this money to bluff the world, to lie, to keep another secret. And in secrets, and sickness, and part of that sickness is the recognition that with all that money, you could send every kid to college for free. You could make sure that every child has health care. You could do about a million or four good things with the tens of billions of dollars, which is just one small, tiny little sliver of the defense budget. And we complain about socialism in this country. I hear all these people wanting to, you know, the libertarians and the conservatives, they're very concerned. I'm like, you have socialism. You are living in it. It's just that your socialism is one of death and destruction and fear and pain, and based on this mindset of scarcity that we had to evolve with for 100,000 years as human beings. Oh, yeah, well, what if, you know, there's no deer to hunt? What if there's no more berries to pick? You know, so it's understandable. And so I'm able to have compassion. And this is one of the forms of love. We have different types of love. That sweet Eros, which I recently had the ability to experience, thank goodness for that, or more. And then there's storge, that familial love between parent and child, between cousins and siblings. There's the filial love, which is compassion, the Dalai Lama would talk about. How do you have compassion for the little Eichmanns of the world? You recognize that everybody has the same struggles in life. And nobody's teaching us this idea of pain and love being connected. We all have traumas to overcome. We all have adverse childhood experiences. We all have a lack of connection, authentic connection. And especially here in modern society, I call it the time-space compression of what we've done. It's amazing. And we are powerful. There's no doubt about it. But the society we've created for ourselves has not fully embrace the idea of consequences being more important than intentions. And part of those consequences are mental health issues. Part of those consequences are environmental health issues. And we need to be mindful of how we can live in such a way as to not create those consequences, but still understand the lessons of Professor Payne, so that we don't have to continually go through this cycle of let's learn anew, and then die, and then let's build this up, and then die, and build this up, and go through the cycle of mania and depression, go through the cycle of civilization coming up and collapsing, pain, destruction, life, love, and try to find a balance. And that's becoming mature, not only as an individual, but as a species. And I feel like our spirituality is the stories we tell. You know, as Kurt Vonnegut said, man's got to tell himself we understand. Well, this is a way for us to tell ourselves we understand. And whatever story is going to allow us to understand that flow of pain and love and be able to have more compassion. And as Jimi Hendrix would say, you know, when the power of love overcomes the love of power, the world will know peace. Well, that's kind of true, you know. How can we get to that point where everybody can experience that? Because when you have soul loss, when you're that bitter, jaded, cynic, mentally ill person, when you're on the autism spectrum, when you're caught in the middle of a city being overstimulated by EM waves and sound waves, constant stimulation that is overwhelming, you can't be in touch with yourself. You have to shut yourself off. You have to become a rock instead of the water. And I see, especially folks here, where it's like, oh, we no longer accept the fact that we're going to allow the world to make us hard and to turn us into rocks. We're going to do everything in our power to stay water, to stay soft, to stay smooth, to stay flowing. So that's why, you know, I look in and I check in with those, that animal totem, and I check in with the archetypes, because I'm a crazy wizard too. Like I said, I can create and do wonderful things. And, you know, I have that warrior within who's fought the battles, you know, tried to keep water clean, tried to keep friends from being homeless. I've had the king experience, even though I don't like it, that leadership role, and I feel like I have to learn how to follow before I can lead, because I became a community leader. And then people started to come to me, instead of it just being a business, I was leading and building a community, which was a whole different ballgame. People came to me for their mental health issues, and people came to me for their creative problems, and people came to me for their spiritual issues, and all of a sudden the militant atheist became a spiritual leader inside of a community that he was just struggling to make home. Whew! It was a lot. And so I had to go and take a little break from it and put a call out to my ancestors, which is another thing, that a way to keep myself grounded, keep myself in that flow of water so that I don't get become a bit of a jaded person. And I came to realize that my connection to the trees wasn't simply the old school ideas of, oh yeah, man being a tree, strong, growing roots deep, but I had these wonderful experiences of shape-shifting my energy and becoming the tree and recognizing that I am here in Italy, where I went to visit, working on an olive farm, doing what my great-grandfather did for all those years, experiencing the life, learning what puta la giù meant, in other words, on the farm. But I realized, oh, here's this spirit, and I am an olive tree grown, and I am amongst the whole grove of my ancestors, and my ancestors are here to teach me. And at that moment in time, I had had a little bit of water damage, because I was being a water dancer a little bit too much, and I was feeling the flow of not just my energy, but as an empath, everybody else's energy. And so instead of just having one or two interactions a day, where we can set up a meeting to talk to somebody, or we can deal with just family a few times, all of a sudden I have 15, 20, 40, 50 people a day having these deep conversations where I need to be open and emotional and vulnerable. And I needed to be able to switch gears into getting stuff done. And so I started to not take care of myself as much. And I began to get what I call water damage, the emotional and spiritual damage that comes from not keeping yourself grounded enough, from not being able to care for yourself. And I was working on this olive farm that all the trees in the valley had been neglected for about 10 years. And so they all had water damage, and because it was kind of set up in the valley with the trees going up the side of the hill. And our job, which was a wonderful experience, I basically had about 10 acres to myself every night, and I would get up and Matteo Martino would come. And Martino, we called Il Dottore, he was the doctor. He could look at the tree and be like, And I zoop, 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 pull a little sliver out, and here's the water damage. She'll cut off this branch and that branch and this branch. And Mateo would climb up the tree and cut off the branches. And I would do the physical grunt work of, yes, let's pick it all up and burn the leaf trimmings, and let's do the physical labor of putting the wood into the wheelbarrow of Cariola. Nicola, Cariola, sopra a giù, sopra a giù. Nicola, puta la giù, puta. wonderful times. But kicked my ass. And so, as I was healing the trees and helping to heal the water damage of the trees, I was helping to heal my own water damage. And the ancestors did put a call out to me. And they let me know that, okay, well, this life, based on the damage of your past, and now I realize that this idea of past lives, I haven't worked out some of the different, you know, spiritual ideologies of it yet, but for me, this idea of past lives has a basis in reality. So aside from just spiritually being connected to the trees and talking to each other through mycelial networks and understanding my ancestors, I recognize also that we have not just genetics to go on, but the epigenetics that gets passed through generation after generation. And Western science is finally starting to catch up and understand that traumas get passed down through the generation, and that nature and the experiences we have actually affect our genetics. They actually turn on and off genes based on what happens to you. And so as I've reacquired my soul, and as I've taken care of myself and become healthy, all of a sudden, the ticks and twitches of my youth, they're gone, they disappear. All of a sudden, that depression and that anxiety that I have, the fear that I used to use to drive me to do amazing things, get into manic states so that I could create and become that rocket scientist and that I could develop the kind of communication device that I know is possible. That settles down and I'm able to find peace and calm. And sometimes I write stories and I incorporate all these wonderful ideas of the wizard or of the warrior that wants to do lots of marginally legal things to fight the system. And I put that into fictitious form now. Maybe someday I'll find a battle worth fighting. And I probably will. But I have a feeling that battle will be a bit more personal and less about the compassion for all of humanity and more about the compassion of the people who are in my life and the community of woozles that I've come to know and love. And let me tell you something, Michael. You are a woozle, my friend. And I thank you very much for this opportunity, and we can have a discussion and ask about a million questions that I've glossed over a lot, but that'll do. That's
excellent. I think you got a new name, Brother Woozle. I think probably this is the best presentation we've had so far in our listening circle, because it's very personal, and I think everyone, even though I don't know everyone, I know some of you, I think many of you can relate to many aspects of his story. And sharing our stories with one another and knowing that you're not the only person. I've talked to several people actually this last few days, and saying one of the things here, they can't talk to people out there about the things that they can talk to people here about, because out there, family, friends, whatever, you're crazy, you know. But here, you find fellow woozles, you know. So there's a safety spot, you know, that people, not only the beauty of the place, but the people you meet and so forth. And I think you've anchored in that real well in terms of what you've shared. So we can now pretend like you have questions and he has answers. If you have any. If not, then... And I want to thank Austin for this incredible musical style. First time I'd experienced didgeridoo cleansing instead of sage or sweetgrass. Yes.
Yes. And this idea of sound healing is
pretty profound.
It's truly amazing. It's something that I've been discovering and learning about. Based on my pain, one of the little bits of pain I didn't say that more recently, about a year ago, I hurt my back again, and I was compensating for that pain and hurt my knee, tore up ligaments and tendons, and then was immobile and hurt my feet. And so it took like 6 months of pain, but sound made it so that I didn't need to take as many drugs, because I was trying to, during that time, of course, I don't like to take opiates, so I don't. And but certain sound healings, I didn't listen to the didgeridoo, but singing bowls, ASMR is another technique that doesn't have a whole lot of Kapolei science behind it, but people have been doing it, these soft, gentle, like whispers in the ear and crinkling of papers or whatever, you know, scratching their beard. You know, you get these delicate things, and for certain people, they have this response of kind of that tingle, that shiver that goes up your spine. And so if you have that kind of response to any kind of audio, there's amazing potential for sound healing to take place. And as I listen to the didgeridoo, and even what Omni does in his massage therapy, using didgeridoo and singing bowls on your body so that you not only can hear the vibrations, you're feeling them through your body, through the energy that's within your chakras. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, well, I feel much more in alignment. I'm in less pain. The inflammation decreases. You don't need as many drugs. And so there's this very, you know, intimate connection between healing the spirit via this musical emanation of that, and that connection to the physical. And so I just find that, you know, yet one more connection.
A couple other things to say. One is, any of you who live in the local area, we do this every Sunday morning, so you're welcome to come by. Of course, there's no charge or anything. Another acknowledgement I want to make, just because he's here, this guy over here in the corner with the curly hair that has a funny accent, he's responsible for building this and many of the shelters that you're staying in. He's a magician with tools. He throws these things up in just a few weeks. That's incredible. So we are very, very fortunate to be gifted with his presence and what he's able to create. It comes in my mind, I see the pictures, and he translates it into the physical reality, almost exactly of what I see. So just acknowledge me. And the woman running around the little baby is his wife. She keeps him straight. Anything that anyone else wants to share before we're probably moving into past noon already, I don't know.
11:47.
Lunchtime.
Anyone
have anything you want to share, ask, discuss, whatever? Going once, going twice.
Thank you all.
Again, thank you for being here. Thank you again, Brother Ruzel, for your for your insight and your story. And have a good rest of the weekend.